goes by the pseudonym Bo Snerdly.
It's time for the Soul of Excellence.
He is a radio host at 77 WABC here in New York.
The Rush Hour is on the air.
Rush.
Now here's Bo Snerdly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Welcome, my friends, to Tuesday's Bo Snerdly's Rush Hour here on WABC. If you would like to be part of the program this afternoon, 800-848-9222 is the number to reach us, 800-848-9222. And, of course, as is the case every single day, there is more news than we can possibly get to. There's news on the college campuses. There's news in the courtrooms. There's news coming from the halls of Congress. I started to say the bowels of Congress because that seems to be more appropriate. And later in this hour, we will speak with Daily Mail columnist Maureen Callahan. She wrote a fascinating piece about 4 days ago on Harvey Weinstein and what his release could mean for the quote-unquote Me Too movement. And we'll take a stab at that. At Columbia University in the overnight hours, a bunch of students stormed the university, a university building, and they hoisted a banner calling for intifada. For anyone that has any doubt, look, if this protest by these students were all about lives in the truest sense, if they were protesting the civilian deaths, and that's what this was about, trying to call for a ceasefire, I think many people would take a more sympathetic view for it. No one that I know of that has a consciousness about them wants to see innocent civilians caught up in a war. Some of the stories of babies that have perished in this conflict have been heart-rending. I mean, and when I say the conflict, I don't mean just Israel's reaction to the terror attack. I'm talking about the entire conflict starting on October 7th when Hamas launched a surprise attack, terrorist attack, on the Israeli nation. And some of the things that they did to women, babies, and other male innocent civilians are unspeakable. And they were met with denial by professors and others on some of these very universities, at some of these very universities where protests are now occurring. But if the protests were limited, if people were saying, okay, we've had enough innocent bloodshed, I think that they would be getting a lot more of a sympathetic reaction. But what are we getting from these protesters? We are getting huge doses of the kind of anti-Semitic passion that fueled the Holocaust in World War II, a hatred for Jews. And in some cases, some of these college students and their professors actively calling for the elimination of the Jewish state and Jewish people. That's what we're getting by some of them. We are getting this reaction. There's a big story, I think it was in the New York Times today, about what these protesters want as the end goal: divestment. They want their colleges, their universities, to withdraw from investing anything effective immediately. They want these universities out. That's in the Washington Post. I have the story here. Divest. College endowments turn into a flashpoint of student protest. The student groups are pushing schools to cut any financial ties to Israel. Well, again, what is this rooted in? If it's about life, then the hypocritical nature of this would be surely scrutinized, because these same colleges could care less if Planned Parenthood is on their campuses. And you talk about a factory for genocide. That's what Planned Parenthood is. A legalized factory for genocide. But it's not about life. It's about the Jews. And that is what is driving this. And this call for Intifada at Columbia now, actually on some of these campuses, there was at George Washington University, the statue of George Washington was defaced. Anti-American, clearly. So what is happening is that the extremes of the left are being shown to the world. They are on full display and being shown. And so what are those extremes? They are rooted in hatred for the Jews. They are rooted in an endorsement of socialism over capitalism. That is another one of the sub-themes that is running through some of these protests. They are rooted in anti-Americanism. They're also racism. There are protesters loudly saying, that it is the white Jews that offend them in some cases. I can't remember where I read that one. I'm going to have to go back and look. And it may have been just a one protester or a few, but I know I read that remark that was coming in from some of these, well, at least one of the protesters. And there's also this entitlement, that this self-righteous entitlement that is on display. That is evidenced by a story today that is also in the Washington Post. Fired Google workers who protested Israel. Israel deal. Have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. They want their jobs back. The audacity, the arrogance of these. This is this bunch. First it was 28 and then it spread to more, sitting around in their mask like we're still in the pandemic, taking over a Google building, which is ironic of itself. I mean, the tech sector is almost as extreme when it comes to liberalism as academia. The terminated Google workers who staged protests at two company offices earlier this month over the company's contract with Israel have filed a formal complaint with the National Labor Board alleging that Google violated their rights . Here's some of the statements that they said in this. These fired workers claim they weren't debating politics. That's what they claim. But instead discussing their working conditions, which include building software that is sold to governments like Israel. If you don't want to do the work that your company has contracted for, then you should quit. You sign on to them to work for them. But instead, these little miscreants believe that they should be the center of attention. They, the workers, should now be dictating to the company what the policy of the company is. This entitlement, this sense that they, what they think is so damned important, is astounding. And they say, that's legally protected activity. It's legally protected activity. We were protesting because it's working conditions. We have to build software for governments like Israel. That's legally protected. In the document filed with the board and obtained by the Washington Post, the workers specifically say that Google violated their rights by terminating and or placing them on administrative leave in response to their protected concerted activity, namely participation or perceived participation in a peaceful, non-disruptive protest that was directly and explicitly connected to their terms and conditions of work. No, your terms and conditions of work is that you come to work, you do the job, Not that you come to work and you organize a political protest during working hours, that you take over company headquarters, sit down on your behind instead of doing the work that the company has assigned you to do. This is pretty basic stuff. You go to work, you do the job that you're supposed to do. And then comes all this leftist claptrap. We must resist Google's repression of worker organizing. What is this? Right out of the Communist Manifesto or something. We must resist. I can't believe I'm taking up for Google. We must resist Google's repression of worker organizing and demand that Google be responsible for their retaliatory act. It's retaliatory to fire a bunch of insubordinate little twerps. Excuse me, I shouldn't name call. That it's retaliatory in their point of view that Google fire a bunch of people not doing their jobs because they think their political beliefs are supreme rather than doing the job that they have been assigned to do. That statement, we must resist Google's repression of worker organizing and demand that Google be held responsible for their retaliatory actions against employees asking for ethical applications of their labor, comes from a woman, Zelda Montez, one of the Google workers arrested for protesting, then fired. We, the workers, will not stop organizing our collective power to ensure an end of technology for apartheid and genocide. Yeah, well, organize on your own time, because you have plenty of it now. And one day, I mean, if the National Labor Relations Board agrees with these leftists, then that should go on the list of things, of agencies that need to be abolished. That anyone would go. They Google hires these people to make the software shut your mouth. And if you don't like your job assignment, go to some other tech company. No, they're making software for the apartheid government of Israel. All right, and so now you have these university students with the same sense of entitlement. One hand is out asking us, the American people, to pay off their student loans because they entered into a deal and now they don't want to pay their own loans back. So we're all supposed to come to the rescue and pay their student loans. They got their little greedy hands out looking for someone else to drop a welfare payment into it to pay off their loans. And at the same time, they're demanding now that they can dictate to these colleges what the colleges should be invested in, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is reaching a breaking point, and I am glad to see, in a way, that they're exposing who they are, and the professors are just with them. This is the part that's just amazing. These institutions have veered so far off course from true education. They've just become indoctrination camps for the left, and they are exposing themselves to the entire world, and they honestly do believe that they have the right to dictate to their bosses what the terms of their work are, to dictate to the colleges where colleges should invest in, to demand that they have the right to participate in terror movements, to demand the right that they have a right, to demand the right so that they can spew their hatred, their unbridled hatred of Jews. This is what has happened to American institutions of higher learning. There is no higher learning. Oh, 2005. Dave Matthews in the news. The Dave Matthews Band on this day, almost 20 years ago now, agreed to pay $200,000 after their tour bus dumped a busload of human waste on a boatload of tourists in Chicago. They're going over a bridge. The bus driver, who was on the bus alone, dumps the human waste. It lands on people taking a tour of the Chicago River. They were trying to protect it, protect the Chicago River. Instead, they ended up getting pooped upon by the Dave Matthews bus. Diego has been over the Dave's. It is now called 800 pounds of human waste dumped on these people on the Chicago River. You talk about a messy afternoon. You talk about a smelly afternoon. You talk about a disgusting afternoon. Protect the river? 100 boat passengers got pooped upon. Now, Diego has traveled over that bridge, and he has a name for it. What do you call that famous bridge now?
I'm calling it the Dave Matthews Bridge.
It's the Dave Matthews Bridge. Come and get your poop. Talking about smoke on the water. No, poop on the water. And pooped on me, too. Save me from the poop. What's for lunch? We're coming back 800. 848-9222. Oh, we have a description. My nephew TJ found the description of it. Let me read it to you. The liquid waste was brownish yellow in color, had a lot of foul, offensive odor. The liquid human waste went into passengers' eyes, mouths, hair, and onto clothing and personal belongings, many of which were soaked. Some of the passengers suffered nausea and vomiting as a result of the exposure to the Dave Matthews Band human waste. On this day, but of course, the boat's deck had to get swabbed by the crew. That must have been a fun job. And they didn't protest either. They just cleaned it. And service resumed a few hours later. 2005. Dave Matthews Band in the news. WABC.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The Rush Hour is on the air. Attention Ditto Heads. Attention Bo Scouts.
Rush.
On the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Yeah. Boy, everybody's weighing in. America's small caffeinated mom, Rhonda Trock, weighs in on the Dave Matthews Band. Well, she's also talking about the protesters. This sense of entitlement with the protesters. But it applies to the Dave Matthews story. We're all up Blank's Creek now. You know that impression well. You're really up. Yeah. Level 42 brings us back in 2019. Boone Gould passed away, English musician, one of the four founding members of Level 42. 1986, they had the big hit, Lessons in Love. And, of course, always love this group. On WABC Talk Radio 77, well, you know that this Judge Merchan has found Donald Trump in contempt of court today, fined him $9,000, expressed the wish that he could fine him more, but he can't. Warned Trump, you're going to go to jail if you keep doing it. I don't know what else to say about it. This case is just despicable, and it is just every day of it. It's just more and more outrage. Democrats, Washington Post, are vowing that if MTG and others go ahead with this move to get rid of Speaker Johnson, they will vote to make sure that he keeps his job. Which is interesting. In other news, the Biden administration is planning to some of you are going to be very, very happy with this news. Very happy. You dope smokers out there will love this next story. And you know who you are. Yeah, man. The Biden administration plans to reclassify marijuana, easing restrictions on it nationwide. What could possibly go wrong? Having a nation full of potheads. What could possibly go wrong? The Biden administration will take a historic step toward easing federal restrictions on cannabis, with plans to announce an interim rule soon reclassifying the drug for the first time since the Controlled Substances Act was enacted more than 50 years ago. Four sources with knowledge told that to NBC News. Marijuana should go to the less stringent Schedule C, and the U.S. government would acknowledge its potential medical benefits. Yeah, right. That's what this is all about, medical benefits. First, the student loans. Let's hand out money to the students. Now, let's make sure that the pot. Do you see where this is going, folks? And for you pot lovers in Texas who like pornography, this might be an interesting day. You get good news on the pot, but if you're under 18, bad news on your porno. The Supreme Court of the United States of America today refused to block, on free speech grounds, a provision in Texas law aimed at preventing minors from accessing pornographic content online. Long story short, in Texas, they wanted all these sites like, I don't know what they are. I should ask somebody. Diego, what are the popular porn sites?
Should I answer this?
TJ, what are the popular porn sites? Nobody wants to answer.
I'm not answering this.
Where is Carlos? Carlos, what are the popular porn sites?
Oh, he's leaving. He's going out the door.
He's leaving the room. You see how all of these guys turn into squishes? One simple question. I wouldn't know because I don't visit them. None of these guys noticed it. Well, I don't know. They just,
I just don't want to answer.
Oh, listen to them. I know the sites. Well, anyway, what Texas wanted to do was make these porn sites prove you have to come up with some sort of, imagine this. You have to prove your age. You have to, in other words, they want to check your identity to see porn. This is amazing in this country. If you ask people to show some kind of identification check, the right to vote, liberals have a fit. You want to see porn, show some identity. Well, liberals had a fit about that, too. Anyway, the Supreme Court says, no, Texas can make minors or people coming to the porn sites prove their age. And that. Okay, we got to check in, ladies and gentlemen, with traffic and with Kim Komenda. When we get back, yes, your calls are coming up. So if you're on hold, stay on hold, please. And don't watch any porn in the break. Oh, good. My dear Lizzie Arradabelli is going to do the traffic here for us. And believe me, she doesn't know anything about these stories. And let's see. And how appropriate, Diego's playing Beat It by Michael Jackson. That's because Beat It went to number one on this day, 1983. Eddie Van Halen on guitar. Third single went to number one. And we're going to check in with Kim Komenda. When we get back, Maureen Callahan and I are going to discuss Harvey Weinstein. So, yes, do that.
The Rush Hour with Bo Snerdly.
Goes by the pseudonym Bo Snerdly.
Rush.
Now here's Bo Snerdly.
1983, Spandau Ballet. While Michael Jackson was at the top of U.S. charts with Beat It, across the pond, this was the number one single. True. It was a throwback, beautifully produced. And still one of my favorites, Spandau Ballet, I Know This Must Be True. On the telephone, lines with us from the Daily Mail, UK. Well, a columnist, Maureen Callahan. Maureen, thank you for joining us. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. Your column from April 26th fascinated me. Headline, Me Too Backfires. Rapist Harvey Weinstein may walk free and warns our beloved Maureen Callahan, that the desperate media mob and rotten U.S. justice will have done more to damage women than this monster ever could. Ms. Callahan, what do you mean by that?
I know. It was a bit sort of not particularly subtle. But I think, you know, like many people, women especially, it felt shocking and extremely disheartening to see this decision. But at the same time, anybody who had been following Harvey Weinstein's appeals, which of course, you know, most people have not, there are far more pressing issues in the headlines. But for anyone who had been following them, it was clear that his conviction was likely going to be overturned because there was such an overreach on the part of New York prosecutors, on the part of the judge, James Burke, who oversaw this case. What it really came down to was allowing three or four other women who were not part of this criminal complaint, were not plaintiffs in this case, to testify as to their experiences with Weinstein. And this was rightly judged a complete overreach. And this is what happens, I think, when you have an overzealous prosecutor. Cy Vance's office, by the way, Cy Vance was the DA at the time, had declined to prosecute in a much earlier case involving Harvey Weinstein, a Brazilian model who came forward, went to the NYPD, said she had been groped by him. They wired her up. He called her. He said, let's have a drink. She goes. She's surrounded by undercover cops. They build a very tight case The lead guy, the lead investigator on this case has said as much to the press. We had a solid case. They presented it to Cy Vance. He declined to prosecute. So he had to sort of make up for this earlier, what looked like too cozy of a relationship. And this is what happened. Legally, it was overturned. And I hate to say it, but that was the right call.
Wow. Now, I have to ask you, by the way, over across the pond, further than the pond, today, French actor Gérard Depardieu has been apparently taken into custody, according to some news reports, in connection with accusations that have made against him. And he's, of course, saying he wrote a statement last October when these charges were first brought to the attention of the media. And he says, to the media court, to the lynching that has been reserved for me, I have only my word to defend myself. He says that this interaction that he's being held for was consensual. So I need to ask you a question, though, that has bugged people like me. And I'm going to beg forgiveness if this, in advance, if this question is a little bit offensive.
Go ahead.
Hollywood knew, apparently, it was an open secret that Harvey Weinstein was capable of misbehavior with women. And I, for one, will never condone this forcible behavior. It's not condonable. It is indefensible. That said, do women who are in these kind of Hollywood roles, this guy's a powerful filmmaker, this guy has a reputation, apparently had a reputation that people knew about. What is the responsibility of women in dealing with people that have the reputation for being handsy, for being overly aggressive, for being downright pigs? Is there any credence to the argument that some of these, not all of them, that some of these women who later complained should have known better?
You know, I will push back on that.
Okay.
There was actually a great piece in the New York Times, of all places, about a lot of the real damage and carnage left by someone like a Harvey Weinstein in his wake. So for those women who don't want to, quote unquote, play ball, right? Who not want to transact sex for work. He essentially blackballed them in the industry. More than one famous actress has said he spread rumors. He would tell directors not to hire me. I was too difficult. I was crazy. No, I did not want to sleep with Harvey Weinstein to get jobs. So there were careers that were, you know, killed in the cradle, as it were. There are other people powerful in Hollywood, the George Clooneys, the Matt Damons, who said they had only ever heard that Harvey was kind of a dirty dog, that he, you know, slept around on his wife and, yes, would promise, you know, hold out the promise of roles to actresses in order to have sex with them, but they had never heard anything about rape. Is that believable? I think it depends on the person. You know, there was definitely a whisper network among actresses. Annabella Sciorra, I believe I'm saying her name correctly, was one of the women who came forward. She was present at court, said that she had confided in her friend Rosie Perez. At the time, it was a contemporaneous outcry that Harvey had raped her in her apartment. So that was definitely known, and I put this in the column. There's a very famous clip that is still available online of Courtney Love on a red carpet in 2005, or is it 2015? I think it was as early as 2005. She was asked by a reporter what her one piece of advice would be for any woman looking to make it in the industry, and she said, if Harvey Weinstein invites you to a private party at the Four Seasons, don't go.
Boom. Wow.
So it was known. Yes.
Okay.
It was known.
All right, so then let me ask
you. Powerful. I'll just to circle back to button up that point. Harvey was so powerful and making so many people so much money and winning them so many Oscars and making so many dreams come true that anybody who was really in a position to stop him allowed it to continue. And those are the complicit people. Those are the ones to blame, not the women.
I'm glad you mentioned the word complicit because that goes to my last question we have time for. And I want to invite you back because I want to have a larger discussion with you about this. Okay,
I'd love to.
Okay, great. Here's my last question to you. Do you find it odd that the only person serving time in this whole Jeffrey Epstein fiasco is the woman?
I do. I think that is such a great point. I absolutely do. What also shocks me is that she did not name names, that she did not trade information for a lesser sentence. That is surprising to me. There are no open investigations that we know of into any of the very rich, very powerful, very famous men who were in his penthouse on his island, known as, I believe it was Orgy Island. Pedophile Island, excuse me. Thank you. On that private plane. I think you're 100% right.
Yeah. Yeah, on the Lolita Express.
The Lolita Express, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Maureen, I think you've done a great service with this article. I hope, and don't take my question to think that I think Harvey Weinstein shouldn't serve every bit of the time that is due him. But at the same time, these prosecutions, and you talk about overzealous prosecutions. Well, we're seeing some more in New York right now, but that's another story for another day.
Another story for another time, but listen, that's going to backfire on them spectacularly as well.
Aha! Yes, indeed. You are a delight to speak with. We have to speak more.
I'd love to come back and have a longer chat with you. Sounds wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We have to check in, my friends, with Lou Dobbs here on Boston Early's Rush Hour. And your telephone calls are coming up. Get your thoughts together. We're going straight to Rapid Phones when we get back. Well, we're going to listen a little bit of music first. But you recognize this one. Ben E. King. Formerly with the Coasters. On WABC Talk Radio 77. As you stand by me. Passed away.
So darling,
No. I'm sorry. Thank you. Yeah, he did. He passed away at Hackensack University Medical Center in 2015 on this day. I'm Benny King on WABC Talk Radio 77. Maureen is awesome. Maureen is totally awesome. Off the chain. We'll be right back.
Should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble to the sea. I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me.
Rush. It's the Rush Hour with Bo Snerdly on the Red Apple Podcast Network.
Reminding you one more time that Friday, May 3rd is the opening day for the Staten Island Ferry Hawks, 77 WABC. Thanking our loyal listeners with free tickets to the game. That's right. Free Ferry Hawks tickets. All you have to do is go to WABCradio.com/Ferry Hawks. For your pair of free tickets, they're available while supplies last. Make sure you get there. I also got an answer during the break. These guys here pretended they didn't know any porn sites. I don't know any, but they do. They just wouldn't say. I finally got an answer. They said, go to ClintonFoundation.xxx. ClintonFoundation. You should see the look on Diego's face. That's what we used to call Bill Clinton's president. Rush used to call it the Clinton Presidential massage parlor and library. On this day, 1977, Glenn Campbell goes to number one in the United States with this great one, Southern Nights, his second number one single.
James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snerdly, presents Rapid Phones.
Let's start in Staten Island with Debbie. Debbie, how are you this afternoon?
Great, Bo. I'm going to address these protesters. Maybe someone should interview them, these entitled protesters for Hamas, and give them two guaranteed entitlements if they choose. Number one, a free airfare to Gaza so they could fight the fight directly. Number two, you are entitled, if you choose to trade yourself for one of the 100 hostages being held by Hamas. That will show you how connected they are to their cause if they refuse.
Debbie, brilliant. Thank you. Olina in, or I hope I'm pronouncing Orlina, in New Jersey. You are up next. How do you pronounce your name, sweetheart?
Olina.
Olina. Beautiful name.
Olina. Bo, thank you so much. Your show is fantastic. You have an intelligent, sober, slightly sarcastic, very humorous, and musical view on today's reality, and you have a great sense of common sense.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. But anyway, let me share my passion, if I may.
You may.
Well, yeah, thank you. What right does anybody have to tell any business how and where they should invest their money if they're doing it legally? And as far as the students are concerned and their gracious, nonsensical so-called professors, the professor's job is to teach. That's what they were hired for. The student's job is to learn. That's why they were admitted. So what's wrong with these people?
They are entitled. You know, Rhonda Schrock, America's Small Caffeinated Nom, did a essay for us last weekend on our Saturday program, and she said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that many of these kids grow up to be like little gods. They're treated like that by their parents. And that is exactly what we're seeing here. This entitlement that the whole world revolves around them, and they go out into the world with it. And Alina, very, very prescient thoughts. Thank you so much for joining us. Let us go to Carl in Westchester.
Hi. Years ago, during the Occupy Wall Street, I overheard some people talking about an idea I thought was pretty good at the time. Don't worry about getting these people out of wherever they're occupying. Put a fence around them and keep them in there.
Carl, that's brilliant. Let them stay. Just put a fence around them and don't let them build a wall. Let them stay in there. I love it. Carl, great point. Let's go to Minnesota. And Frank, how are you, Frank, in Minnesota?
Good. I just want to say I agreed with you 100% on your opening comments. I think as employers of these very ungrateful people who feel so entitled, we should remind them that they are at will employees, and we should remind them often and when we first hire them, which means
Google
today. And let
Google gave them a great reminder, and their will was, you're fired. Love it. Rich, you have 20 seconds. Make it count.
You need to listen to Duran Duran cover songs on YouTube. All the confusion and white lines. Turn the volume up to 11.
Boom. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. May God bless and protect each and every single one of you, your families, your loved ones. Love and gratitude for your being here with me and allowing me to be with you. God willing. We are back tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Bo Snerdly's Rush Hour. Until then, my friends, bye.